second, and I'll make reference to another one a little later on. What we want to do today, wrapping this thing up, we're going to talk about debt freedom and how to get rid of debt, and if I have time at the end, a little bit about contrariness. If you don't know what contrariness is, then we'll explain it when we get there. Now, remember, we've been talking about money and we've been talking about credit specifically last week. Some people's salary depends on your interest. You know, we don't think about that. Banks, retailers, car dealers, lawyers, they all make money from your being in debt. Now, the argument sometimes is made that consumer debt motivates the economy, stimulates the economy. Why is that? Why do they say that? Anybody?
He wants to get more debt. You're a banker.
Right, right.
Or the more people get in debt, the more they're buying stuff from people who make, they're manufacturing, like, for example, a car dealer, or if they don't get people to go into debt, they can't sell their car, and therefore, they're not
making
money.
That's true. Let me put a different spin on this. Do you know that you get, the more debt there is, you get more motivated workforce? Because they're motivated to pay off their debt, to work hard and get their salary. But the economy will survive without consumer debt. It grows a little slower, but more solidly. But credit is the American way of living. And we forget that it's not God's way of living. Yeah.
I don't think it was always that way, though.
No, it was not.
Is that a recent thing? I mean, the last 50 years?
Exactly. Exactly. Very true statement. Did you ever read the fine print on those loans?
You don't want to.
Yeah, I'll mention that in a few minutes again. Well, actually, yeah, we'll get there. Now, there are basic three rules for debt-free living. The first one we talked about way in the beginning, have a budget. Make a budget, and the key to that is use it. You know, don't just make it and then ignore it, but actually use it and abide by it, because you are the one that borrows. You are the one that signs that credit slip or that agreement. It's in your hands. So if you need something and it's a priority to you, put it in the budget. And if necessary, you'll just have to strike something else out of the budget and replace it with this priority. For example, you want to go on vacation next spring, but it costs you $600. So you put aside $100 a month. Come spring, you have the $600 for the vacation. If you don't save that, and you're going on vacation anyway, you have to go on credit. And you're still going to have to pay the $600 plus interest. It'll cost you extra. So you pay either way. Doesn't it make sense to save it up front and save that interest payment, regardless whether that banker gets his salary? Now, sometimes we have an emergency. Something unexpected happened. It happened to me last week. I had a blowout tire. And by the time I got off the highway, driving in the left lane, you know, the tire was damaged to the point where it couldn't be repaired and had to be replaced. So you need to think about those emergencies. And in your budget, put money aside for emergency. If not, you just have to put something off. You know, I may have needed a pair of new shoes. Well, I'm going to wear the shoes with holes in the sole for another couple months so I can pay for that tire. We have to adjust that way. Not just, okay, well, this happened. I need to borrow some money and do that. The second rule on how to become debt-free is don't buy something that goes down in value. We've talked about that at one time. Remember we talked about investments, loaning money, like putting in a savings account or a savings bond, or buying something that increases in value like collectibles? Well, consumer credit or consumer loans is just those two rules upside down. We buy on credit instead of giving the money for somebody else to use. Give you another example. We buy a stereo. Oh, we got to have a stereo. Everybody in the neighborhood has a stereo. And you get 18% credit on it, 18% interest on it. The stereo costs you $450. By the time you pay that off, it'll cost you well over $500 with the interest. And what's your stereo worth at that point? Maybe $100 if you want to sell it, if you're lucky. So, save up. And while saving, now you can decide, do I really need that stereo? Or, by the time you saved up the money, $450, maybe the stereo has come down in price and you don't even have to spend that much. So there are a lot of things that can happen, and usually out of credit that way. I speak from experience. I had lots of credit, lots of loans, paid them off. Credit can become an addiction. Now, sometimes you get these promotions. Remember, banks are in the business to loaning out money, just like any other business. So you may get a promotional like 0% interest. And a few of those on the back table, because somebody in the audience here gave me these. 0% interest. Now, you can use that to pay down your debt, I suppose. You know, it makes logical sense. I have a loan, 12%, 18%, 24%. It's not unheard of. 0%. I can pay that off and not pay a lot. Well, let's take a closer look at that. 0% for 6 months. Okay? Now, what happens after 6 months? The rate goes up to 14%. So if you take a two-year loan, your average is about 10% if you calculate it out. You're paying about 10%. But there are a lot of other things. I talked about the fine print. Looking at the fine print, it says 14% or. You got to look for those little words. Or 10% over the index rate. All right, now what's the index rate? Find the index rate. That's the highest, remember, highest 1 month London in the bag offered rate as quoted in the Wall Street Journal on any day during a 90-day period. Now, which one of us is looking at that index for 90 days and looking which one is the highest? There's another comment in a fine print. And I bet that most of the people here don't read the fine print when they get these things. Because most of the time, I just chuck it. This one that scares me even more, that the introductory rate or special rate may terminate if you fail to make a minimum payment to us or any other credit institution. So you don't pay your electric bill, this 0% is gone. We don't read that small print. I got another one just yesterday, another 0%. And this one is for a year. And after 12 months, it goes to 12%. So if you average that out over 2 years, it's about 6% over the two-year period. So you see the differences between those offers that are out there. But then again, look at the small print. Your annual percentage rate may vary monthly. The rate is determined by adding a margin to the prime rate. So the prime rate, we have no control over. And the margin that the bank determines, we have no control over. And not only that, but it says your interest rate depends on, and I quote, upon account opening, your interest rate will be dependent on your credit rating. So they don't even tell you up front what your interest is going to be. They'll do a credit check. We've talked about credit checks and what's accumulating there. And then they'll determine what you get. Now, I don't want to negate all of those offers, because some of them, are good, reasonably good. I don't want to promote credit because I've been talking against credit. But here's another clipping from Newsweek, and I'll read it. Commerce Bank has rolled out a new Visa card that it says is completely fee-free. No annual fee, no charges for cash, no balance charges on cash transfer, late payments, or exceeding your credit limit. It's a good deal. Crazy. Paying your bills late and going over your limit aren't going to help your financial health. See, even Newsweek says, this is a good deal, but it's not going to help you in your financial situation. Or another comment here is, Chase Cash Plus Rewards Visa offer 5% cash back on grocery stores, drug stores, gas prices, but it's not easy to find. Very rare to get this. So, use discretion, but I'm surprised that even the populace, it sounds good, but it doesn't help your financial health. So my caution to you is always, always, always read the fine print. Read every letter of it. And if there's something in there you don't understand, it's trouble. So we talked about the first rule, budget. The second rule, don't borrow to buy what goes down in value. By the way, do cars go down in value? Yeah. And most people have a car loan, right? Yeah. I had only 3 new cars in my whole life. I told you about that first one a couple weeks ago. So I decided to buy a new one and get out of all those troubles. 1957 Pontiac Star Jeep. And guess what? On an icy storm, the car slid and was totaled. It wasn't paid off yet. So I said, that's it for me. No more new cars. And for 35 years, I have not bought a new car. The first time we bought a new car after that was the VW Jetta in 1995. So that's already 10 years old and we still have it. The car I have now, when I went in to buy that, they had a 2% interest on your car loan. That sounds good. I can do better than 2% investing my money. Well, when the car came in, they didn't have the 2% anymore. So, my son and I, we said, well, wait a minute, what happened to the 2%? Well, yeah, that was when you put, but it's only good at delivery. You have to take delivery under that promotion. Now, it takes 3 months to build a car. So they're never going to pay those 2% interest rates, because by the time you get your car, they say, sorry, that's gone. But I had planned for that. So when the guy told me that, I said, well, sorry, you can't have it. I said, okay, I'm going to pay cash. And he almost fell off his chair. You're not going to give me the 2%? I'll pay cash. So, how do you like driving your car? I enjoy it because it's debt-free. Now, the third rule on getting yourself out of debt is just that. Paying all your bills in cash at the time they come due. You know, I get the electric bill, and it says, you know, $100 for electricity. And there's a little black box and says, payment, please fill in. You know, I said to Heidi already a couple of times, why did they put this box in there? And then I remember, you know, 25 years ago, I might have paid $50 on that $100 bill because that's all I had in my checking account. I had to wait for the next paycheck to pay the other $50. You know, so you want to get the point, today I pay my bills the day they come into my house. Do it, don't forget it. That way you don't get a late payment, you don't get a bad credit rating, whatever. So pay your bills on time. Don't wait for the next paycheck because, oh, I want to go a weekend to the Wisconsin Dells and have fun. You shouldn't go on a weekend in the first place because that's Sunday church. But an argument is, well, I don't carry cash around, so I need a credit card. I pay with credit once a month. And if you pay once a month, there is no interest in most credit cards. And sometimes you have to do that. If you pay for an airline ticket on email or even through my travel agent at work, I can't pay the travel agent in cash. So you need a credit card for that. But the thing is that you have to pay that credit card within that 30-day period so you don't have to pay the interest. That whole deal, though, works out to be a trap, too. And you've got to be very, very careful because you charge your airline ticket, I'm going to pay it when the bill comes in. In the meantime, you got a tire blowout like I had last week. So you need the money for that tire blowout, and when that comes in, you don't have the money in the checking account. So you have to let it ride. Well, it runs right into paying interest. And the bank counts on that building up. It's their business. They depend on you loaning money. So it's startling, and the balance starts creeping up and creeping up, and pretty soon you're at the credit limit. So you get a second card. That one starts creeping up. You know, and you get to the point where I got to play the lottery to get out of it. Remember, and I mentioned this to Pastor before the lesson this morning. Yeah, those banks are out for your money. Let's take an example, and you can do the calculations. You take a $1,000 loan at 18% interest. Not uncommon. If you have store credit cards, they charge you 24%. Assume 18% interest on $1,000. You get your monthly bill. It says, minimum payment due. Okay, I'm going to be very frugal. I'll pay the minimum payment. Anybody want to guess how long it takes to pay off the $1,000?
Forever.
Close to that. 12 years and 7 months. 12 and a half years to pay off a $1,000 debt if you pay the minimum. And the interest they collect in that period is $1,400. Now, does that make sense? I think we all agree that this does not. But if you note, if you need to float credit, as I said before, it becomes as addictive as drugs and alcohol. And the longer it goes, the harder it is to get out. You know, the best day in my life, bar nothing, was the day I could say to Heidi, free. We don't owe a penny to anybody. You know, the second best day was I paid my car in cash. But you know, it talks about this in the Bible. In Romans 13:8, it says, owe no man anything. Proverbs 22:7, it says, the borrower is a servant to the lender. You borrow money, you're a servant to the bank. So I think I've talked enough about this, and so far I'm still on time. Now, let me talk a little bit about stuff. That encompasses a lot of things. We consume goods, food, soap, gasoline, you name it. We buy it, we consume it. But most consumer goods that we buy, we don't wear out. We don't use them up. Shoes, clothing, games, sport gear, even electronics. We accumulate them. Our input exceeds the output. We start piles. We start stacks. We get full closets, full drawers. You know the drawer you open and then you can't close it anymore? We've all been there. So we get closets full of stuff. And the stuff starts consuming space, time, money, attention, and even our faith. You know that trailer we bought? We got to use it. So we got to go on a weekend trip, skip church this week. So it starts affecting even our spiritual life. King Solomon already knew about this. I will turn to that. If you put a marker in when we were in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 the last time, remember Scofield Bible, page 699. We read at that time in Ecclesiastes 5, we read the 10th verse. I think it was in the first or second lesson. Let's read today verse 11 and 12. When goods or stuff increase, they are increased, they are eat that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. Why do you think that is so? Why is the abundance suffer them not to sleep? Any suggestions? You worry about it. You worry about it. If you have an abundance of stuff, the stuff becomes your master. And you become the slave of that stuff. And the stuff starts controlling you. So, there are two ways to overcome this. Stop stockpiling or unstuff. So let's talk a little bit about stopping to stockpile. As a child, we got toys, we got clothing, and it got broken or worn out before your parents could replace it. Now we're grown. We buy our own stuff, and it just starts accumulating. Now, how can we avoid accumulating? You can establish a rule and say, one thing comes in, one thing goes up, like indicated. So, you buy a new tie, get rid of an old tie. You buy a new shirt, I gotta have this shirt. Get rid of a shirt. Exchange everything that comes in with something that goes out. You got to draw a line somewhere. Now, obviously, for some of you young people, when you're starting a house or a household, you have to start accumulating so that you get all the things that you need. But as you grow older, those of you that have moved, and probably most of us have moved at some time, think about the move. Well, first time I moved, a suitcase was enough. When I came to this country, and then the next time we moved, we used a little pickup truck, like the Ford Ranger that my son had. The next time you move, you rent a small U-Haul. And the next time you get the biggest U-Haul, And then you can't rent it anymore. So then you need a moving van, you know, the big, long ones that you see on the highway. And that's a sign of accumulating stuff. And at times, or with some people, it may get to the point that they need to buy a bigger house to accommodate the stuff that they have. Hobbies take space, too. Why do people hang on to all these things? Anybody got an answer to that?
Pack rat syndrome.
Pack rat syndrome. That's a good answer. Yeah, right. I need it now. You're succumbing to the marketing challenges. So you need to have a no accumulation policy of some sort. And you set the limits, you set the parameters of that, and then follow that. And if you do, it changes your whole buying habits. You're much more careful buying things. You do less shopping. You do less spending. You make wiser choices. You think about, do I really need a new shirt? I've got 12 of them hanging in the closet. I can still wear those. So you get a lot wiser. You may have something that is very, you may have a shirt, to stick with a shirt, that's very dear to you. You really don't want to give it up. So it's worth more to you than getting a new one. Go within those limits. It also teaches us that no accumulation policy, it also teaches us giving. We get something, we give something away to somebody that can use it or needs it. You're still sticking with a shirt. There may be a poor soul that can't afford to buy a shirt. Yours is still perfectly good, and it fits him. So you get a new one, give it away. That leads me to the second point, and that's the enough. Get rid of what you don't need. Garage sales is one way. The only trouble with garage sales is the people that have garage sales, they also go to garage sales. So they replace one stuff with another stuff. But another good one is the Salvation Army. And actually, using the Salvation Army as an example, did you know there is a fourfold benefit when you give something to the Salvation Army? The first one is, obviously, less clutter in your home. But the second one is job training. Because the things that need repair, that need fixing, the Salvation Army has people that do that fixing, that do that and learn a manual trade with that. The third benefit is financial. Because they sell this in the Salvation Army store for those people that don't have the money to be able to afford at a much lesser price the items that they need for their daily living. And that money that the Salvation Army makes, they can then use for their mission activities. And I already mentioned the fourth benefit, that it provides for goods to the less fortunate, or to the homeless, or to the unemployed. Yes. And it is a tax deduction, right? You got that. I forget that. That's the fifth point then. You can write that off the tax. So here's some thoughts on the subject. It's okay to own stuff, but not more important than God. Don't let the stuff control you, control your time, control your thoughts day by day, and you become a slave of the stuff. Second thought is, be your collection sister, not its slave. Some people collect things and they become so engrossed and so dedicated to that it takes over their whole being and their whole thinking and their whole time and everything. And think about the fact that stuff can take more than space. It takes up time. It impacts your relationship with your family, and it impacts your faith, as I already mentioned. Someone once said, and I think it's good, have you ever seen a funeral hearse with a luggage rack? Makes you think. Now, switching the subject, and I will finish, Pastor. Just a couple sentences on the subject of insurance. Insurance plays an important role in all money management. And a lot of people neglect that. All need insurance of some sort or another. I have known of and do know pastors in the Lord's work that have no insurance. Period. They don't have any car insurance. They don't have any health insurance. They don't have any life insurance. Nothing. And their excuse is, the Lord will provide. Well, the Lord provides, but the Lord has given us a brain too. And we need to take care of our family. What happens if that pastor is in an accident? Who cares for his family? So it is important, even for people in the Lord's work, to have adequate insurance. I just heard this week, Heidi and I were at a seminar, and I heard somebody tell a friend of his was in an automobile accident, and the passenger in the car was killed. Do you have enough liability insurance in these days of lawsuits? You know, the minimum liability insurance on the car policy usually is not enough to cover you should something happen. And there are enough drunk drivers out there. You know that as well as I do. So it's important that we carry adequate insurance and care for our family in that way as well. You know, we look for saving and look for providing living substance to our family should something happen to us, but we neglect really what is important for our family, not to have to suffer afterwards. I mean, we all hope it doesn't happen, but we also all know that it does happen. Your pastor used the example last week, I think it was last week, of the gentleman that had this wallet full of credit cards. Well, his poor wife was stuck with that. You know, it was okay while he was alive, but once he died, his family, his wife, suffered from that.
Your brother Martin,
yeah.
In the circle you're referring to, they're going to call that living by faith.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you and I have talked about that.
And they're going to answer that every time. We're living by faith. And that's real nice if you're by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a family, I think the Bible talks about providing for your family.
Exactly.
And it calls you worse than
exactly.
The name of faith needs to cease. I just want to make a church. As a personal principle, I don't take on or consider missionaries that aren't in the report for the same reason. These people go to other countries. They usually have no insurance. They have no way of getting out of that country if somebody gets sick. And they spent, I think, $700,000 or something to get a missionary out of a country broke. Who's going to do that if you don't have insurance?
Yeah.
So people will go to another country for, you know, they have $1,000 support and I'm living by faith. When they get in a jam, who's going to take care of them?
Right.
So right. Some of this has to be thought through, and I think some of this living by faith is disobeying God, what it boils down to.
Yeah. Thank you for that contribution. That's exactly what I was driving at. It's very, very important. I've taken out insurance, most of you know, I travel a lot. And I carry extra insurance that should I get seriously ill or in an accident, someplace where they don't have a good hospital, that insurance allows me to get airlifted to a good hospital where I can get the proper. And to me, that was worth it. Yes? Right.
Or the church or the family.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you for that example. You know, and a lot of insurances, you can take them out for short periods of time. Suppose you drive a motorcycle or you drive a Ferrari, and neither one of them you want to drive in the snow and the ice. So you take out insurance for only the summer months, and you can do that. And during the time that you store it, you only cover for theft, I think is what you cover there. So there are ways of not overspending, but you need to have adequate insurance. Okay, now let's change subject completely and leave this series on a positive note. And the remaining minutes that I have, let me talk about what I call the contrarian. Now, what's a contrarian? Here's an applied passage from the Bible. I know that's not what it means, but we can apply it here. In Matthew 7, Jesus talks about the broad way and the crowds that go the broad way. And he talks about the narrow way, which, and I quote, "few there be that find it." And you'll find Jesus throughout the New Testament not going where the crowds head for, but going in the other direction. There are many examples of that, where Jesus goes the other way than the way the crowd goes. And we can apply that concept to money. Where the crowd goes, it's expensive. If you go against the flow of the crowd, you're generally better off. Think about shopping. Your child wants a specific toy. And the week before Christmas, you run from one store to the next to find that toy that your son wants. Well, number one, you spend a lot of these prices. Number two, you have trouble finding it because the demand is high, the supply is low. And number three, pay a premium price for it then. So if you're a smart shopper, you shop after Christmas. You get the sales, you get the discount. They got to unload it because the big stores, it costs them too much to store that stuff for another year. They're trying to get rid of it. And this is when you truly get a bargain. Now, I do something when I think of gifts. I may go somewhere else today and I see something, I say, you know, Suzanne would really like this. And it's June. And I'll buy it. And I save it. And then comes Christmas time, I go in the closet and get all the things out that I bought at good prices. When the masses were not buying and the prices were cheap. But they bear interest. See, that's a growing investment. That can happen too. Well, a bit the today example, gasoline. Yeah. Do you get gasoline on empty? I better stop and get gas. Or do you go down the road every day and look at the gas prices and find out where it's least expensive? You know, if I find a gas station that's very inexpensive compared to all the rest I pass, I may need only a quarter of a tank, but I stop and I get it because I may not find it that inexpensive again. So, smart shopping. The crowd always wants the new. Talk about a car. The new model's out. I got to have the new one. Well, you can get last year's or sometimes even a two-year-old new car at much less. Because, again, it takes storage space up for that dealer. So instead of buying something new, get something secondhand. You go to the Salvation Army, and you can find a suit that fits you. Nobody knows where you bought it if you don't tell them. Beautiful dresses, especially when you go in the more expensive neighborhoods. You can get beautiful things that were sometimes not even worn. My family's picked up dresses that had never been worn. That's not where the crowd goes, but that's where we should go if we're money conscious and responsible with our budget. Yes?
Just for an example, I got a pair of shoes from the Salvation Army once for $1, and that's 3 years.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Yes, and I'll get to that. Another one is the crowd wants things to perfection. It's got to be perfect. Well, if I buy a washing machine, who cares if the back is dented in? Nobody sees that when it's placed. But I get $50 off. You know. And I've done this. I've been to Sears and wanted to buy an appliance, and I see one that is damaged, and I say, how much do you want for this one? Oh, that's damaged. I said, that's all right. How much do you want for it? Oh, give me the XYZ. Okay, I'll take it. You know, that's the way the crowd does not go. That's the way we should go if we're good stewards of what the Lord has. And the next one I was going to mention was travel. Travel is that's an obvious one about travel. Very obvious. You don't go in season. You know, you go in the off season. And some of the associations I belong to know that too. They go and have a convention or a conference in a place that is very popular, but they do it in the off season. Because they get a better rate for the conference, and the people that come get a better rate on the rooms and the meals and so forth. So that's an obvious one. But there's some other ones less obvious. Let's say you're a music fan, architecture, history. Oh, I've got to go to Vienna. Vienna is the city to go to. Well, have you ever considered Budapest? It is just as exotic a city as Vienna. And you pay half the price going to Budapest. And they have good music and history and culture. Another example, Hawaii. Oh, the vacation spot, Hawaii. I've never been to Hawaii, but they say it's beautiful. It's just gorgeous. But there's a place in the tropics called Cabo San Lucas. It's beautiful. And it's 50% the cost. So you can have the same nice vacation. Yeah, you can go out and say, hey, I've been to Hawaii. Who cares? No. So look for alternates. Right now we're in the fall. Everybody talks about, oh, the fall colors in New England are just beautiful. We've got to go to New England for a weekend or for a week and enjoy the colors in New England. And by the way, this is a sideline, but the paper this morning says the fourth state in New England approved gay marriages, Connecticut now. But the fall colors in New England are beautiful. Have you ever considered Door County, Wisconsin? That's in driving distance, and is just as gorgeous. And you can save a lot of money. If you fly for pleasure, get yourself bounced off an airplane. And you get a free flight for that. You know, if you have the time, if you're retired, now that I don't have to be in the office each day, hey, if they bounce me, great, I'll take it. You get a free flight after that. Or consider flying an airport. You want to go to L.A. Fly to Burbank. Fly to Orange County. And a couple other airports. in short distance from L.A., you pay a lot less doing that, and you still get to where you want to go. I have in the past even driven to Wisconsin and taken a flight out of Michigan Airport, which flew to O'Hare, picked up more passengers, and went to my destination. And it was cheaper than if I would have taken the same flight out of O'Hare. So you need to look at those things. When I traveled on business a lot to Puerto Rico, I found out one time, if I fly Chicago-San Juan, it's X dollars. If I fly Chicago-San Juan-St. Martin, it's less. So I flew to St. Martin to spend a day there, Tropical Island. And it had a meaning to me because I'm of Dutch heritage and part of that is Dutch. So you can find these inexpensive deals if you look for them. Don't be chance, I got to go to San Francisco. I got to go to New Orleans. Well, you wouldn't want to go there today. But, you know, sometime in the future, yeah, there are other airports nearby that you can go to. You know, you have to go to Yuma, where my daughter lives. I might get a cheaper flight into Phoenix and drive, and the cost, even of a rental car on top of the flight, still saves you money. Yes?
Also, when you're talking about going on vacation, check the weather and check what the type of weather
is. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But you also need to check. Because if they go off season, I'll have to check when you go off season if it's safe.
Right. And if you use that philosophy of being a contrarian, it works for things that don't even have to do with money. For example, if you're someplace in a hotel or in a conference center, if you go to the restroom on the far end, on the next floor, it's usually the cleanest one and the less crowded one. If a stranger bumps you in the front, watch your wallet in the back. You always look for the other side. Yeah, there's an old saying, if you watch a magician, whatever he's doing with his right hand, watch his left hand. You know, and something that surprised me, I didn't know this. If you go to a theme park, Epcot, anything like this, if you're in a country that drives on the right side of the road, when you go in, go to the left side. It is less crowded in the morning, and the right side will be less crowded in the afternoon. And if you're in a left-driving country in England, you do the opposite. You go on the right side in the morning and the left side in the afternoon, and you'll enjoy it more. I did finish, Pastor. There are a lot more things to be said, and I did not touch on taxes, for example. There are a lot more things we could talk about in terms of money. Did you have a question? That's true. And the catch with those, you know, come to us, we give you zero for the first 6 months, first 12 months, is really to get you out of the other bank and catch you for themselves. They can earn with what you're borrowing. Yes. So like I said, there's a lot more things we could talk about. Maybe sometime in the future we'll have a round table or something like that. We can think about this. But let's close for today with a word of prayer. Lord, we do thank you for this time that we had to share together in the last 5 weeks to talk about handling money in a conscientious manner, and that we be good stewards of what you have given us, both in terms of money and goods, that we use it wisely, that we use it for your glory, and as an example to others how Christians should handle stewardship. With this, in Jesus' name, amen.
You know, I sit down over there and realize.